Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to singer Chili from the Grammy Award-winning girl group, TLC, about her role as Zora Neale Hurston in Marshall. The movie opens nationwide in theaters this weekend. The High Museum of Art has a new exhibition debuting this weekend titled Making Africa. I caught up with the show's curators, Carol Thompson and Amelie Klein, to chat about what viewers can expect and much more. And closing out today's show is Grammy Award-winning singer Lisa Fisher. She'll be appearing at the Rialto Center for the Arts later on this month, and Upfront talked with her about being one of the music industry's top background singers. We'll also be playing music from her, as well as TLC and Christian McBride. But first, here's this week's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Central Casting is seeking ladies who appear to be between the ages of 18 to 22 and look like beauty queens. This is for a period piece and we need big hair. Fittings will take place on Tuesday, October 17th, with a work date of Wednesday, October 18th. If this is you, please submit your name and photo to insatiable@centralcasting.com with 80s pageant in the subject line of the email. Central Casting is looking for real firefighters, police officers, and EMTs to work on an exciting scene for the upcoming movie, Mary Lou. The film project is also looking for real law enforcement, armed services, or SWAT experience. This is a two-day call working Wednesday, November 1st through Thursday, November 2nd, and you must be available for both days. A fitting will also be required in College Park on this Monday, October 16th. If this is you, please submit your name, phone number, height, weight, and current headshot to MaryLou@centralcasting.com with real in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, voting is open to the public for the 49th NAACP Image Awards Entertainer of the Year Award. The six nominees include Chadwick Boseman, Ava DuVernay, Bruno Mars, Issa Rae, Chance the Rapper, and Jay-Z. The winner will be revealed during the two-hour special airing live on TV One, Monday, January 15th, 2018, the federal holiday marking the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Go to WCLK.com to cast your vote. The deadline is November 17th. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Hey Upfront listeners, this is Ray Cornelius urging you to make your pledge of support for this show and the countless others that you listen to throughout the week at WCLK.com. Remember, your contributions keep programs like this on the air. Membership matters at Jazz 91.9 WCLK. My first segment features Rezonda Thomas, better known as Chili, from the multi-platinum selling girl group TLC. The Grammy-winning singer, songwriter, dancer, and television personality is appearing as Zora Neale Hurston in the new film Marshall, which opens in theaters this weekend. Upfront caught up with Chili to chat about playing such an iconic American figure and why everyone should see this film. She also opens up about TLC's upcoming European tour and a possible Las Vegas residency. Well, good morning, Chili, and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing just fine. I am really, really excited about this weekend. It's a very big weekend for you because the film Marshall is actually in theaters, and you had a cameo appearance as the one and only Zora Neale Hurston in the film. How was that?
It was so much fun. Oh, my gosh. That day on set was amazing. You know, getting to put those clothes on, you know, time period pieces are so much fun anyway, just because I think they dressed way better than we dress today.
Yeah.
and I was so excited, but I think my mom was more excited than I was because she has so many Zora Neale Hurston books and things. So she's read all of them. So she was like, I don't know why I didn't think my mom wouldn't know, but I just kind of just, I was like, oh my God, mom, you know, I got this role to play Zora Neale Hurston. She's like, Zora Neale Hurston? Like, you know, like that was her girl. Like, so, wow. And my mom actually told me a lot about her, and I did, you know, my research, of course, but yeah, it was so much fun. I mean, anytime Reginald Hutland, who's the director of the film, calls and asks you to do whatever, you just say yes.
And I don't want to give away.
He's so amazing.
I was gonna say, I'm sorry, I didn't want to give away the scene because it was so cute, is what I'll say. But you looked amazing. I mean, when they said your name and you kind of stepped in out of the shadow and we saw your face, I was like, oh my God, she looks just like her. Like that was just crazy. The clothes, the way they had your hair. I mean, you look just like her. So it was just, that was crazy. You mentioned some of the research and stuff that you did. Was there any, did you get to read anything beforehand or what was that, I guess that process
like? I read some stuff about her online, and then, you know, my mom talked to me and plus, you know, you know, what I was doing in the film. And again, I don't want to give away the scene. You know, I think the biggest part was her relationship with
Langston Hughes.
Langston Hughes.
Yeah, Jussie Smollett.
Yeah, so with Langston, I mean, I'm like, whoa, like, I didn't know about that, you know, because growing up, I've even done projects on Langston Hughes. We all have, I think, but, you know, I never knew who he was seeing or anything like that. So that was surprising.
Wow.
And so once I kind of figured out what the scene was and their relationship, which was an off and on kind of thing, I was like, okay, I know how to play this.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah. Are we going to see you doing more TV or more films? Because I remember, you did the holiday special with Vanessa Williams, which I totally, mm-hmm. I still watch that.
I know that thing comes on. The director told me when we shot that, he was like, I'm telling you, this is going to be on for the next 30 plus years. And he was not lying.
So are we going to see more?
He didn't lie about it. Every Christmas, holidays, it comes on.
Yeah. Are we going to see more of you in more film projects?
Yeah. I'm definitely open to it. But for me, it's, you know, again, it's all about the right role,
right.
You know? And so I like a lot of different things. But if it's the right role and I feel very comfortable with it, then I'm definitely going to do it.
Yeah.
Because then it's fun again. It's not, you know, that hard work.
Well, you did an amazing job in that role. What do you think is the takeaway message? Because I got a chance, like I said, to see the film. I thought it was amazing. I mean, I think the crux of the story is definitely something that viewers or our listeners will be able to relate to. But what do you think is the takeaway story for Marshall?
Well, I think that, you know, with this generation and even the generation before, which I'm a part of, I think we saw growing up a lot more and learned a lot more. Black History Month was, you know, it's really stressed
right.
when I was growing up, you know what I mean? And so then even with my son, not quite as much. I mean, I had to make sure, you know, those kinds of things were happening at home, but now I'm like, you know, Black History Month to learn about. I mean, I honestly don't think it just should be one month. I think it should be, you should learn about, you know, your history, period.
Right.
You know, it shouldn't be just one particular month carved out in the shortest month of the year to find out all about these greats that paved the way for all of us. So, and especially in our justice, you know, department. I mean, he really kicked doors down, and to be that smart at the same time, it is such a time where, you know, a Black man being smart, having an education and talking about changing laws and getting into it that way and defending innocent people and have the knowledge to stand up in a courtroom, you know, opposite white lawyers and stuff. I mean, he knew the system.
Right.
And so I think that it teaches everybody, you really have to know your history. It's very important to know that, because I even learned a lot of stuff about Thurgood Marshall you know, watching the film. And it's just such a very important piece that I hope everybody watches, and not just people of color. I mean, everybody should watch this film. It's a very important piece that we all need to see and learn about.
We're going to shift gears here, and let's talk about, you just kind of got back off from being off the road, or on the road, I should say, with the I Love the 90s tour. Does it ever get old for you? I mean, because you guys sing these songs, and I ask performers this all the time, you're constantly singing these songs over and over and over, but does it ever get old to you?
No, it really doesn't. And the fun part, too, you know, we're able to incorporate a lot of our new songs, you know, our single that's out with Snoop Dogg and some of the other songs on the new album, and infuse them with, you know, the catalog that we already have. And so, and everybody was excited. I mean, it was great. And so obviously that put like some newness on. I mean, I'm real happy that we have new music to perform. I mean, we're very blessed and happy that, you know, you're looking out in the audience and people know the words and doing the dance and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's like an adrenaline rush, you know, when it's something I think you really love to do. It's kind of like your job, you know,
right?
When you interview people, some of your questions are generally the same, you
right.
know what I mean? That you have to ask. I mean, then you can dig deeper for each person depending on what you're talking about, what the subject matter is. But, you know, if you love what you do, it's just not a hard job.
So what's next for you? I know you guys are going back on the road in January, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the end of January, we go to Australia to kick off the overseas tour, promoting the album there, and New Zealand, and then Japan and Europe in the summer. So it's going to be crazy from the end of January all the way through the summer.
Okay.
So, and we're... We just recently switched agencies. We are with ICM now, and really excited to be there. And because our goal is to secure a residency in Las Vegas, so
okay,
that's what we really want.
Oh wow! Oh
yeah.
Wow! Yeah. oh my God!
Mm-hmm.
I just the visuals that are going through my head right now, because you guys have always had so much going on, not just with the music, but just visually how you presented your music videos. They were always so colorful, the costumes and the choreography. So I can only imagine you all having a residency in Las Vegas, what that would look like.
Oh, listen, you think you have all kinds of things going on through your head? Shoot, you can't. Oh my goodness, you couldn't even imagine what's going on through mine, because I have been wanting this. I mean, it's just a dream of ours to be there. And so, you know, when that opportunity presents itself, because we're in talks and, you know, the feedback is really great. So we just got to make sure, you know, we're at the right place. But, oh my gosh, it's going to be so exciting.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Chili, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and being a guest here on Upfront. We're so looking forward to this weekend's premiere of Marshall in theaters, and also checking out the new music. And of course, hoping that you will keep our fingers crossed and hoping that we'll be able to come out and see you guys in Las Vegas for that residency. That's going to be awesome.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much.
Support for WCLK programming comes from Georgia State's Rialto Center, presenting jazz saxophonist Pharoah Sanders with his quartet on Saturday, October 14th at 8 p.m. Sanders is best known for his avant-garde and world fusion sound and will share the stage with William Henderson, Nat Reeves, and Joe Farnsworth. Ticket information is available online at rialto.gsu.edu.
Hey, this is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
If this ain't love, I guess I'll never know it, even if the thunder struck me down tonight.
Making Africa is debuting this weekend at Atlanta's High Museum of Art. The international touring exhibit is being described as a fresh look at African design through a myriad of diverse works by more than 120 artists, ranging from playful to provocative to political. Up Front caught up with Carol Thompson, the Fred and Rita Richmond curator of African art at the High, to tell us what fans can expect from the show.
Making Africa, a continent of contemporary design, but it presents it's design broadly defined from an African perspective, and so it and digital as well, heavily digital, lots and lots of internet-based work, internet portals, telephone apps, and Amelie will speak to this as well. But that's, you know, she was saying earlier today that the internet has done more to transform Africa than maybe anything in its history. Is that an overstatement? I don't know. No, because Africa's connected, you know, in a way that it's never been connected before. And I love the... So Happy is one of the works that I love, especially it's when Pharrell Williams' song, you know, popped into our ears. People all around the world, and I think he even invited people all around the world to make their own versions. So there's a fantastic, I don't know if you've listened to it yet, but it's right around the corner, Happy From, and it's happy from all different places. Cotonou, Benin, Amelie was pointing out there's one, there are also subtle and not so subtle political messages embedded within. Happy from South Sudan, just as South Sudan became a nation. So it's a multi-layered exhibition.
Making Africa is curated by Vitra Design Museum curator Amelie Klein, along with consulting curator Akwi Nwizor. Here's what she had to say about the show's unique title.
You know, making is a very powerful political expression in a world that is dominated by globalized production, mainly coming from the Far East, swapping the whole world and the continent in particular with cheap mass-produced crap, sorry to be so blunt. And in such a world, making locally is a political statement. And that's what we have to see, and that's how we have to understand the notion of making. It is an act of resistance, if you want, against a global economic system. And it is very powerful. It's very powerful. And based on digital production methods and design methods, it is actually happening. That's one thing. Now, Africa. I don't want to bore you with post-colonial theory, yet, again, you know, Africa, in and by itself, the continent of Africa wasn't a notion developed by the people on the continent. It's a colonial construct to very clearly differentiate between, you know, us, the whites, the Europeans, and the wilds, you know, the exotic, the other. Also, on a not only like culturally, but mainly politically and geopolitically, obviously. Now you had these huge colonial empires, and you had an organization, administration. And for this administration, the colonial powers would install, obviously, local authorities. You know, so you'd had people from the individual countries that would administer the empire. And these people would then travel to France, to Paris, or to London to gather, you know, in large meetings, so, you know, where you discuss political issues or whatever. And for the first time, and this is really at the base of a lot of Pan-African movements, you would have gatherings of people from all over the continent in the colonial center, and all of a sudden there was an awareness of a Pan-Africanism or a communal feeling that wasn't there before. Because before, you know, people would realize, you know, they would know, of course, their own tribes or nations and maybe neighboring tribes and nations, but they weren't aware of the entire continent and its power. And so eventually, this colonial construct of Africa as the other became empowering. because all of a sudden these people, and many of them later became independence leaders and became the first presidents and prime ministers of their countries, and they would use this notion of Africa as an empowering notion rather than a colonial disempowering notion. And that's why, in the end, we stuck with the title.
Amélie also talked about the curatorial selections for Making Africa.
We had a very large board of advisors. We had people on the ground who would help. We had experts in every field and in many areas and regions of the continent that would help us pick and select exhibits and objects. In the end, I would say we selected exhibits and pieces. They're not all objects. Many of them are digital, so they're not objects. Pieces for the exhibition that really very distinctly and with much awareness go against our expectations, against the stereotypical Africa that we all have in mind, with our very limited visions of what Africa is. And so often we try to really go against that, and I would say most of the exhibits do that quite well, I would claim.
In addition to the exhibit, there will also be a number of programs and events centered on Making Africa, including tomorrow's conversation between Amélie Klein and South African photographer and LGBTQ visual artist Zanali Moholi. It takes place at 2 p.m. at the Woodruff Arts Center's Hill Auditorium. Go to WCLK.com for more details. Hey Upfront listeners, this is Ray Cornelius urging you to make your pledge of support for this show and the countless others that you listen to throughout the week at WCLK.com. Remember, your contributions keep programs like this on the air. Membership matters at Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
This is Omar Dorsey, aka Hollywood of Queen Sugar, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
Just heard a clip of Grammy-winning songstress Lisa Fisher with jazz trumpeter Chris Bode performing the classic tune, The Look of Love. She'll be appearing with Grand Baton on Saturday, October 28th at the Rialto Center for the Arts as part of their new season. While she's an accomplished performer in her own right, Fisher is best known for her work as a background singer. I caught up with her this week to chat about her career and much more. Well, good morning, Lisa Fisher, and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I am so good. How are you?
Excellent. I am so excited to have you on this show. I've been a huge fan over the years. I don't want to tell my age. But I've been a huge fan, probably since Give Me the Reason. That's why I was saying I'm not going to say decades because that'll tell my age.
You have a young, chipper voice. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the very, very beginning. When did you know that singing is what you wanted to do for the rest of your life?
Probably in kindergarten. I knew I was walking to kindergarten with my mom. And it was, a lovely sunny day, and there's this piece of music on the ground. And what I assumed was music was probably just a piece of paper with some scribble on it. But in my childhood, it was music. And I went to my my kindergarten teacher, and I asked her, could I sing it for the class? And she let me. And I just made up, melodies and sang whatever and words, and she couldn't stop me. She was just like, okay, that was very nice, yay. and I just wouldn't stop. She actually had to really stop me. So I just loved the feeling of being in front of people and singing. It just felt natural. natural and it felt right. Yeah.
Wow. Does it ever get old? I mean, because I was going back and looking, looking at your background resume, and I was like, oh my God, like tour after tour after tour after tour.
It doesn't get old. It, you know, every opportunity to breathe is a new breath in my head. And even though it might be, you know, air,
right,
each time that you get to do something, each time you take a step, each time you get to be with friends, each time that you have conversations with people, it's different every single time. It's never the same. And I guess just knowing that every second, every millisecond is never the same, it just never gets old to me.
Wow.
I love the travel, and I love the people I get to work with. It's exciting to, you know, work with different groups of people and to be in these beautiful locations. And, you know, even if the location isn't, you know, absolutely perfect or beautiful, it's still a new opportunity, you know, to sing and to make make the moments feel endless through the music, you know.
Yeah. Now, speaking of people, you have done or served as a background singer for some legendary, iconic, you know, performers. Luther Vandross, as we mentioned at the top of the segment, Tina Turner, the Rolling Stones, Sting, Chaka Khan. I mean, these are all, I mean, you just say their first name and it's just like people automatically know, you know, who these folks are. Do you consider yourself as legendary and as iconic as these individuals? And the reason why I ask that, only because, and here's why, is because you were there when they were making that magic on stage. You know, you were there when, you know, those moments, you know, like I said, I can remember as a kid listening to Luther's music and then hearing live versions and hearing these amazing background singers. And I was like, oh, my God, who is this? Who are these people?
Oh, my God. Well, you know, I don't feel that way, because to me, they were people that I looked up to, and each person literally has their own fingerprint. They're all so different. And I think everyone is special. I really do. Whether you're a singer, whether you're not a singer, whether you're famous, whether you're not famous, you know, there are people who are just quietly beautiful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thankful to have been a witness to just the beauty of who they are. Yeah.
Wow. So I got to ask, and I know this is going to be a very hard question, but is there a tour that stands out in your mind that, wow, that was a wild ride?
A wild ride. I guess Luther's always sticks out for me because it was my first real kind of touring experience.
Okay.
I mean, they're all real. You know, the Crystals were real and the Marvelettes were real and all of them were real, but it felt different with Luther somehow. It wasn't a nostalgia group. I guess that was mainly part of the reason. It was something that was current, and it was a different production as far as just all the time that he took to deal with costumes and fittings. And I'd never been fitted for shoe mold before. Shoes molded for my feet and beaded and hand-beaded. And a makeup artist, first time, you know, travel with a makeup artist. And someone that did the hair. And I just felt so, I felt like a pearl.
Wow.
A little pearl. And I felt that everything that he touched, he just loved so deeply because he loved his audience so much. He really loved what he was bringing to them, and he loved them, and he wanted to share what he loved with them. And he did everything with such grace and such class, you know, and I just, you don't forget that.
Yeah. Is there a particular song, Luther's song, that you enjoy performing? I have my own personal favorite, but is there one that you just, you know, every time he, you know, you would hear the music come up, you were just like, yeah, this is the one.
That's a hard one. You know, because, oh, wow. I mean, Never Too Much was always exciting to me. The minute you hear the, and be like, oh, here he goes. He's getting ready to take flight. Here we go. Yeah. You know, it would be sometimes the first song in the set in a particular tour. So it was a call to get ready, here we go kind of thing. Or when he did Give Me the Reason, it was just really exciting to just sing the little teeny note that I was singing in the song. And so I would always look forward to that. And I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, we would do costume changes. And so usually Luther would he couldn't leave the room without doing House Is Not a Home. And so when we would be backstage changing, it was kind of like my zen time to just listen to him. I always felt like time stood still when he did that song.
Mm, wow. So you appeared in the Oscar-winning film, 20 Feet from Stardom. And it's really sort of put a spotlight on your life, the life of Darlene Love and so many other women who have served as the voices behind a lot of these big names, you know. And so what was that? How were you approached about that? How did you hear about that project? And what made you decide that you wanted to go ahead and do it?
Yeah, I was home. It was like, I'd say June of 2010 or 2011. I think it was 2010. And I was talking with Kathy Schenker, who was Sting's manager. She called, and I picked up the phone, and she says, oh, there's a gentleman named Gil Friesen that wants to talk to you about doing a documentary. I was like, oh, that's really nice. I said, who's Gil Friesen? You don't know who Gil Friesen is? I was like, oh. I was like, no, I don't. And then she, you know, explained who he was, and I talked with him on the phone, and I met him at the hotel. He was just so kind and so lovely. We sat down at the restaurant, and he says, you know, I saw you and Lila Bialy, another wonderful artist and singer from Canada, also lives in New York, and Joe Laurie singing background for Sting at a church. And he says, you know, I love Sting, and, you know, I just adore him. He says, but I really love the singers. I love watching the singers. He says, I want to do a documentary about background singers. He says, what do you think about that? Should we have men? Should we have women? Should we have both? I was like, well, you know, it's your baby. It's your vision. I said, I personally would have both, you know. I said, but this is your vision. I'm not quite sure what your vision is going to be. And we talked about different things, and he would call me once in a while, and he would tell me the steps he's going through, and he says, well, we have a director. Finally found a director. His name is Morgan Neville. I was like, oh, that's really cool, and I'm still traveling. The time was, like, going back and forth between, I think, Chris Bode and might have been the Stones at the time. I wasn't sure. Might have been Tina. I'm not sure who I was going back and forth with at that time.
Okay.
And so, you know, then Morgan called, and they were setting up time to do interviews, and I was just like, oh, this is really cool. And they were just intermittent calls in between, you know, months, weeks, a couple of things that come in and they shoot, and I was, you know, just road exhausted, road weary, and, you know, there was a lot going on with friends in my life and their health issues, and so I was really, really exhausted, And I didn't really think a lot about what I looked like. What I looked like. Because a lot of times, you know, when you go on stage, you gotta, you know, figure out what you're gonna wear, yeah. Do makeup, do your hair, blah blah. But that's not what I do on a normal daily basis. That's not really what I do. So I just kind of crawl out the bed. I'm not really Lip gloss for sure, because I need something on my lips. But other than that, I'm just like, running out the door, looking crazy. And so I just didn't really think a lot about all that. They were really just capturing me in the reality of the situation. And so that I was comfortable with that, and it felt really good, and I just felt comfortable, felt right. You know, I think sometimes people, how can I explain it? They feel that they need to be perfect all the time. And I think you just need to be. You just need to be. And it was just a beautiful experience. And Morgan was like, because I was like, yeah, I'd love to see the finished product. He says, well, you're going to have to come to Sundance. I said, well, I can't see it before then. He says, trust me, it's better to see it, you know, with an audience and blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, man. You know, because I was just like, you know, after it's said and done, you're like, I wonder if I look crazy.
Well, no, it was an amazing film. I remember going to see it in the theaters, and we all just walked away like, wow. You know, you never really think about the sacrifices and what people go through to, like you say, when you're, you know, we see as the audience the final presentation, we see the final product, but there's so much that goes into doing that. Like you were saying, that the shoes and the hair and the makeup and the rehearsals and the costume changes, all of these things. And like you said, at the same time, you're dealing with personal issues. You may be dealing with issues with the label because you may want to go solo. I mean, all of these things that are going on, and or wanting to take that step and just wondering, well, do I take this step? Am I good enough to take that step? So all of those things that we don't necessarily think about. And it was just like, wow. And then what better singers to profile than, you know, you ladies. So it was just like, it was perfect, like you said, for that moment. And I think for many of us, because we had not, I guess if we had not gone to a show, we didn't see you. So it was refreshing to see, you know, what you were doing, what was going on. I laughed when you talked about, you know, you really didn't know what to do with your Grammy Award.
And I love my Grammy Award. It's just so, it's such a gift. And it's just like, you look at it, you're like, oh, this is just so amazing. I can't even believe I got this. What do I do with it now? But it's just so beautiful. It's just so lovely. I'm just so thankful for it.
Wow. Well, Lisa Fisher, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. You really are like, wow, in and out, on the road, up in the air, on the ground, that whole thing. But thank you so much for taking time out. She will be appearing at the Rialto Center for the Performing Arts on Saturday, October 28th with Grand Baton at 8 p.m. So we definitely want you to check that out, and look forward to seeing the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Please come say hello after the show. I'd love to see
you. I will. I definitely will. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to today's show. I'd really like to thank all of my special guests, Chili, Lisa Fisher, and Making Africa's Carol Thompson and Amelie Klein. I would also like to thank my engineer, Mark Angel, and you. Please join us next Saturday, October 21st at 9 a.m. for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.